You're listening to the OMFIF podcast, the show that explores the latest insights and discussions on global finance, economics, and policy for people who love staying informed about the rapidly evolving landscape of the financial world. Join us as we break down complex topics, interview key thought leaders, and provide essential insights to keep you informed about the evolving world of finance.
Hello, and welcome to the OMFIF podcast. I'm Taylor Pierce, Senior Economist of OMFIF's Economic and Monetary Policy Institute. Here with me today is Dr. Max Castelli, Head of Strategy, Sovereign Institutions at UBS Asset Management. We'll be discussing the future of the role of the US dollar in the global economy and financial system. Welcome, Max. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine.
Obviously, de-dollarization and the role of the US dollar is a huge topic that's heavily debated right now in an era of increasing geopolitical tensions. So my first question would be whether we're seeing any signs of a weakening of the dominant position of the USD in the global financial system.
Well, I guess the answer is already in an article that I published in OMFIF in, November of 2023. So I just go back to the title of that article, dollar remained dominant despite growing demand for currency diversification. So for sure, my answer is that we have not seen any significant weakening of the dominant position of the dollar. Just to put a little bit into perspective and given some numbers, if you look at the different measure of currency dominance. For instance, if you look at the share of global FX reserve, and just looking at the latest COFR data end 2023, the dollar stands at around 58.4%. If you take a long-term view, no doubt that the dollar came down. Just to, as a reminder, in early 2000, the dollar was around 70% of the global FX reserve. So we have seen this low reduction trend in the share of the US dollar, which is nothing comparable to a loss of its dominant position, but probably a little bit the reflection of the changing structure of the global economy, with, of course, emerging market now accounting for a much larger share of growth at global level. And then we are just seeing this adjustment. Another indication, of course, that is often mentioned, especially in the media, is the share of the dollar as a global payment, in global cross-border payment. The US dollar still stands at nearly 50% of global payment, followed by the euro, more than 20%, British pound, and we have then the RMB in fourth position at 4%. Although here there is some data issue. For instance, if you exclude intra-payment within the eurozone, actually, the dollar becomes much larger, around the 60%. The euro becomes smaller, around the 13%. And actually, the RMB goes down at around 2.8%. So to your first question, I would say that overall, despite a lot of talking about de-dollarization and moving away from the dollar, we have not seen a significant change in the global financial system from that point of view.
Right. That makes sense. So small signs of weakening, but definitely nothing threatening the dominant position of the dollar. You mentioned a few, but can you elaborate on the key factors pushing for a weakening of the dominant position of the dollar?
Yes, absolutely. I think there are three major factors. The first one, of course, is the rise of China and the fact that, as we know, the Chinese authorities are very keen to internationalize the RMB, basically to make the RMB a leading reserve currency at the par with the dollar or the euro. And actually, this trend has been something that we have been monitoring very closely at UBS for many, many years when we talk to central banks and when we do our survey. And following the introduction of the RMB in the SDR basket, actually, we saw a dramatic acceleration in the share, for instance, of foreign exchange reserve allocated to the RMB, to basically RMB fixed income onshore assets. Now, unfortunately, this trend has actually slowed down significantly in the last few years. And I think this is largely a reflection of what's going on in China. First of all, of course, the weakness in growth following the opening up from COVID. As we know, there is a real estate bubble which has burst and still is having an impact on the Chinese economy. Of course, as well, a geopolitical confrontation between US and China and the rising sanction risk as perceived by global investors. I think all these has slowed down the increase in the share of the RMB in global FX reserve. I still believe this is a pause. There are many variables here involved. Of course, the geopolitics is one of them, but also how China will come out from this moment of cyclical weakness. But for the moment, I don't think the RMB is a credible challenger to the dominance position of the US dollar. The second factor, which I already mentioned, is, of course, sanction risk. What happened following the invasion of Ukraine by Russia is that we had, for the first time, a sanction against the leading central banks. It's not the first time ever, but still definitely is the first time that there are sanction, widespread sanction against the central banks of a leading economy in the world. I think for sure we saw that this has created some concern among particular reserve managers, central banks, as far as the reserve is concerned. But if you ask me whether this impact has been large enough to really dent into the dominant position of the US dollar, my answer so far would be no. There is still a lot of question. There is a lot of attention over this issue, but I don't think sanctions have yet had a significant impact. It doesn't mean that it will not have in the future, particularly if, of course, if sanction remains a tool of foreign policy for the US and, let's say, for the Western world. I think the point is that the sanctions actually have a broader impact, not only on the dollar, but they have a broader impact across over-denominated assets, for instance, the euro or British pound. So the reality is that so far there are no many alternatives to the dollar or to the euro as far as over-currency are concerned. So the question of sanctions becomes more whether there is scope for having a different tool compared to foreign exchange reserve in order to have more freedom in the use of this accumulated wealth when needed. It's interesting that there are many countries which are non-aligned, if I can call them. I think neutral probably is not the right word, but non-aligned, for instance, not applying sanction, not following basically the Western world in position of sanction against the Central Bank of Russia. But this has not really changed the way they look at the dollar. Think about, for instance, the Gulf economies, which are still pegged one-to-one to the dollar, or even countries like Hong Kong itself, which is still pegged to the dollar, or even other emerging markets, which might want to have less dollar, but in reality, when they look at exchange rate regime, is still very much linked to the US dollar. So I think also that factor is there, but has not really had the big impact. The third one is, of course, the whole question of digital innovation and central banks' digital currency. I think I agree 100% that they could be a game changer, because the way I see the impact of CDBC on this topic is that basically they increase the competitiveness of a secondary reserve currency vis-a-vis the dollar and the other leading reserve currency. But the reality is that if you look at the timing of this innovation, I think CDBC are debated. We know that China is in the lead, is really made many progress. But there are still some concern among central banks to really go all in with CDBC. These concerns are numerous, apart from the cross-border interoperability. I would also say there are concerns about the impact that this could have, for instance, on the role of banks and on the transmission of monetary policy. So I have the feeling that there has been a little bit of a slowdown, in at least in terms of timing, about really making this massive innovation in the global financial architecture. And I don't think the timing is close enough to really have a significant impact on the US dollar dominance in the next few years. Of course, if you take a very long-term view, that's a different story. So if I pull together all these different factors, you can see that there is all these factors altogether are important, but have not really dented the position of the US dollar.
Right. So you mentioned the rise of China and the internationalization of the renminbi, sanctions risk, and digital innovation CBDCs as risk factors. But you said that they're not yet or not so far weakening the US dollar's position. So looking ahead to the future, what do you see as the outlook for the role of the USD internationally?
Yeah, that's where it becomes a more complicated and more interesting, the conversation, because, of course, I think the question becomes as well, basically, the fundamental question we are starting to ask, all of us who are looking at this, is, of course, what will be the role of the US dollar in this new geopolitical context that we are moving in? We all agree that we are in a different geopolitical environment, deglobalization, increased fragmentation, US-China confrontation, also this sort of Western versus North-South type of confrontation that seems to be emerging. But I think the picture is still very, very complicated. It's very difficult to make a call on how the global economy will be in the next, let's say, in 5 years or 10 years' time, because things could develop. I also start to see a more critical view about all these factors. I give an example, deglobalization. I read very interesting analysis. They say that maybe this deglobalization story is largely exaggerated. If you disentangle the numbers a little bit more, we are just seeing a slowdown, but not really a reversal of globalization, which will be something like similar to a sort of Cold War type of situation like we had in the post-war period. So I believe that, however, there are some factors which I think could dent the US dollar dominance. And interesting enough, this would be more self-inflicted rather than coming from competitors. And let me mention two of them. The first one, of course, is about the US and what's happening in the US economy and in the US political arena. So I would mention two fundamental factors to watch. The first one is the domestic political polarization, which seems to be really extreme at the moment. We have a very important presidential election coming up. There is a high possibility of a victory of Trump. So I think many investors and also many central banks are start asking themselves what would mean for the US dollar a Trump victory. And here I think there are, for instance, questions regarding the independence of the Fed. We know that in the past Trump has been critical of the Fed and his track record, for instance, his records in terms of fighting inflation when the inflation started. So you might see some more, let's call it institutional weakness in the US, which has been one of the fundamental pillars of the dominance of the US dollar. I don't think this would happen really in a sort of a sudden way, but let's say if you start to see a weakening in institutional strengths of the US, in the rule of law and more political infighting, this could have a negative impact on the dollar, at least as an asset class, but also eventually down the road as a reserve currency. The second one, of course, is about a topic which is reemerging very strongly, which has been completely absent from the debate so far, which is about debt sustainability. I mean, all of you saw this recent blog from the IMF about the U.S. fiscal position. It's not a U.S. unique story. We know that this is a global story, but particularly for advanced economies, which in the end, they are the issuer of the leading reserve currency, so euro, US, UK, and some others, there is a strong increase in debt. And what is also more important is that there is a sort of a bipartisan support for the increase in debt. In the US, for instance, Republicans favor more debt largely because of tax cuts. Democrats favor more debt, maybe more for public spending. But the ultimate impact is the same, is that you have a very high deficit. You have also very high and rising public debts. So far, this factor has not been there. I remember very well in August last year, when there was the increase in long-term interest rate, that they went just, the US 10-year went shortly above 5%. I was wondering myself, is this about interest rate expectation or it is about a weakening of demand for government bonds, for US Treasury? I remember I even checked anecdotally with portfolio manager, last year there was no weakening of demand for government bonds. And actually there is no weakening of demand for government bonds now. But of course, I think as we move into this US presidential election period, I think we're going to see more attention of investors on the debt sustainability. And of course, a weakening of demand for US Treasury could start to have an impact on the dominant position of the dollar in the sense that this gentle decline in the share of the US dollar in the global FX reserve could accelerate a little bit if this concern grows. Apart from these two factors, I really don't see in the short term a dramatic change. Of course, China is one factor. A stronger recovery in China and the turnaround also in the sort of geopolitical situation of China with respect to the US could once again accelerate the interest of central banks for RMB fixed income. Also in terms of interest rate differential, we might see some rebalancing there. But overall, I think the future will really remain dependent on how the overall geopolitical situation will evolve in the future.
Yeah, so it sounds like there are some external challenges in the short term, but the key factors which could weaken the role of the USD would be self-inflicted. Just taking a longer term view, do you think that there is scope for a low threshold challenge to dollar dominance? So this would be a currency or group of currencies not replacing the dollar in the current financial system, but having the robustness to skirt around US sanctions, for example?
I think it's a very good question. If you remember, there was, and this was actually, has been my view for a while, there has been a lot of talk about a multipolar currency system. So what would mean, basically, the multipolar currency system would be a system where you have, let's call it a region of influence. I would say probably we can think about three, which are one area which is dominated by the US dollar, which I think would include, of course, United States, Canada, and I would say large part of Latin America. The second one would be the euro area, probably also with the dominance of the euro. This could also become stronger, particularly in Europe, if we start to see significant progress, for instance, in capital markets union, in more integration from a fiscal perspective, something which has already been happening, at least on the fiscal side, partially as a result also of emergency measure launch after COVID. But definitely we see a trend there. And of course, the third one would be the one in Asia dominated by the RMB. We know that many Asian currencies actually currently look at the RMB as a sort of reference currency when they think about their exchange rate regime. But so this, I can see a future like that, but the question will become to what extent there is interoperability across these three different zones, and as well, what is the level, what payment system, if there is a payment system serving all three of them. And here I think the question becomes, first of all, the impact of sanction. So sanction, I think, can become a big driver. So far, we can say that as far as the sanction against Russia, I believe the impact has been relatively limited, probably also because Russia de facto is not a very big economy in the global economy context. Of course, it's an important player, but if you look, for instance, the share of GDP of Russia in the global economy is still relatively small. And also the integration of Russia from a financial perspective is relatively limited. So for Russia, what we see in order to go around sanction was more about payments. And we know that they've been leveraging, for instance, the relationship with China, with other countries, to switch payment away from the dollar. That's something that we know that, and is actually reflected very well in the share of cross-border payments. If you look at the countries which shifted more towards, for instance, the RMB, are Russia, Sri Lanka, if I remember well, and a few others. And I think you also discussed this at length in a recent event that you had at OMFIF. The question would be whether we are going to see more sanction, more widespread sanction, particularly, of course, targeting China, eventually in a worsening of the US-China confrontation over many issues which are at the moment there. There, the question then would become, it's not a question of the RMB dominance, but it's more a question whether the China and in Asia will be able to develop very quickly an alternative payment system. I believe that this is something that it is in the sort of policy agenda of China, but I think it will take some time. This could be accelerated by digital innovation, no doubt about that. I think this could happen over the next few years, but I believe that we are not there. The question then, of course, is what type of geopolitical situation we are in. When we talk about geopolitical fragmentation, so far we have been talking about areas where there is a clear separation between different zones, different areas in the world. Just take an example, technology. Technological sector is becoming more fragmented, no doubt about that. But we have not seen, yes, a fragmentation to court. Fragmentation to court would mean that you start to see really isolation and separation across the board for different economies, something similar to what was the Western world versus the Soviet Union at the time. I don't think we are there yet. I'm not ruling it out because we learned that we should be prepared for everything. But I don't think we are there yet, and we should see some substantial weakening in the relationship between the West and China in order to see something like that. So if we bar this type of more extreme scenario, I can see China making more progress in payment in the next few years, creating eventually competing payment system vis-a-vis the US, but I don't think this would yet really basically move a dollar away from the sort of dominant position it is now, at least in the foreseeable future.
Right. So it could be a perfect storm, digital innovation and geopolitical fragmentation or tensions, but we're far away from that now, and that's not the most likely scenario. Makes sense.
I would agree on that statement, yes.
My last question is related to the price of gold and Bitcoin, both of which have been going up significantly over the past few weeks and months. So I wonder if you could elaborate on that and if you see a link to the de-dollarization trend.
Yeah, this is something which is always there. You know, every time gold and Bitcoin, not necessarily always at the same time, go up, you have gold or Bitcoin bugs, right? These are the sort of server who believe that basically when we talk about gold, it's about debasing of currency, that the world is moving into a world where you need to find an alternative store of value because the fiat currency are doomed. You have the same attitude for the sort of stronger advocate of Bitcoin. But in reality, let me start first of all with gold. We know that gold has been through an important cycle over the last few years. For instance, central banks have become net buyers of gold over the, actually not this year, but over the last few years, has been going on for a while after decades of being net sellers. And of course, this coincided with an increase in the price of gold, which has been going on for a few years now. The recent rise in gold that we experienced, which has been pretty robust, 10, 12% year to date in 2024, is actually a little bit more surprising because it happened with actually one key variable for gold price, which is interest rate in the US, not moving down, but actually there has been an increasing view that interest rate might not go down as fast as we were expecting, for instance, in the last quarter of last year. And there are also some who think that given the recent inflation dynamics, interest rate might even go up. And it's not me saying that, but also some important central bankers actually in the last few days in the US and some leading economists. So from that point of view, this rising gold is a little bit surprising. And the question is why this is happening. I suspect that it's not about gold becoming a sort of a new backbone of the future global financial system, but I think it is more about geopolitics and as well maybe some inflation hedging. I suspect that between the two that geopolitics is more important. I say that because, as you saw, gold is a commodity. We know that commodities tend to do well during inflation, but I still remain in the view that inflation will eventually continue going down rather than up. So I think this is just more a market sort of a debate about exactly when central banks will eventually decrease rate. Geopolitics seems to me the best candidate for two reasons. First of all, because we are entering a period of high uncertainty, not only geopolitically, globally speaking, at the geopolitical level, but as well in the US. I mean, the more we go close to November, the more investors will become nervous to see what is going to be the final outcome of the presidential election. And it's not just a question of who wins, but also a question of how he wins and where everything will be smooth. We should not forget, we have history of contested election in the US. We have history of infighting between Democrats and Republicans. We cannot rule out that we are going to end up in November in a scenario which remains very uncertain. So gold is there as a geopolitical edge. Second factor, I think, apart from the Middle East ongoing conflict in Gaza, I think also the Russia-NATO story is there. It is debated. The scenario of a potential direct confrontation between NATO and Russia is no longer a sort of impossible scenario. I still believe it is a low probability scenario, but still is a scenario which is being fought. And last but not least, rising debt level as well can create uncertainty among investors on holding a lot of fixed income. And then you want to start hedging with gold. With Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin is going up not because there is a demand for replacement of fiat currency, personally. I think Bitcoin is going up for a lot of idiosyncratic factors, including something happening within the Bitcoin market, and also because, of course, the ETF approval has really give a lot of tailwind to Bitcoin, simply because we have now a new class of investor, which before we probably was not invested in Bitcoin and now feel more comfortable via an instrument like an ETF. And to conclude, interesting dynamics in Bitcoin and gold over the last few months, but I don't believe that this will have a big impact long-term on the new global financial architecture and the role of the US dollar that we've been debating in this podcast.
Great. Well, those are all my questions. So thanks so much, Max. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you very much to you. And it's always a pleasure to talk to OMFIF.
Thanks.
And to you, of course.
Thanks. And thank you also to our listeners. Be sure to follow our other podcasts wherever podcasts are available. And also check out our coverage of de-dollarization and other key macro topics on the OMFIF website. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of the OMFIF podcast. If you found today's conversation engaging, make sure to stay tuned for additional thought-provoking discussions on worldwide finance, economics, and policy by subscribing to our channel. Stay connected of the latest developments by following us on our LinkedIn page, OMFIF Economic and Monetary Policy Institute.